Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. Excuse me. We are continuing on. We're diving forward in the ratification debates. I actually had a conversation with the gentleman when we were talking about my radio show, because they didn't even listen. They'd never heard my show before. And they said, I told them, you know, well, what's your show about? And I said, well, I actually read the founding documents. He goes, you read them? And I explained the ratification debates and so forth. And they go, yeah, I actually read what Madison said specifically, what Marshall and Iredell and Wilson and all these different brilliant minds that were talking about the terms of the contract and what these things meant. And I go, I know it's kind of boring. He goes, actually not. And he got it. He absolutely understood that it is far more important to understand what they said than me trying to tell you what they said. So that's why, you know, this week, 2-3 weeks, however long this takes to get through this. And actually, what I'm doing this time around, every time we do the ratification debates, I find more stuff to probably add to your plate. Some of the things we're going through, we're actually adding what it means or the process of impeachment, why they were doing this, and what, you know, the impeachment or the indictment process was supposed to be, and so forth. So if you want to understand these things, the terms of the contract were really clear. When people read the Constitution, they go, what does that mean? I don't understand. What does impeachment mean? And they actually talk about it. They give you much more clarity than any propagandist or news cycle or conservative commentator is going to give you. And it's the same thing with the guns, gun confiscation, militia, and so forth. I mean, are you jonesing for news? What's more important, because everything that is happening in the news today, whether it's an assassination attempt somewhere in the world or here, or whether it is gun shootings, or whether it is climate change, impeachment, it doesn't matter. What matters is that we focus on getting the solution started. There is nothing that is going to get the federal government out of our knickers and save us other than us acting. I can't impress upon you this importance. I cannot emphasize how important it is to stop worrying and to start becoming productive. You know, everything that you're watching is a distraction, and the news cycle knows it, and they make billions of dollars a year keeping you distracted. Because all the sponsors go, this is great, people are watching you. Now, to be honest, the news cycle has actually, you know, fell down a lot, or they no longer have the same viewership that they used to have. And that's just because they've been caught with their, you know, their fingers in the till. They've been caught, you know, with corruption. They've been caught with lies, fake news, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter. They're not trusted anymore. That's why their viewership is down. But they're still making bank. I mean, these institutions, CNN and so on, these organizations are making way too much money. But anyway, I don't want to really focus on that. I want to get into the ratification debates, and we're talking this today. We're starting on the North Carolina debates, because as far as I'm concerned, we really did a good wrap on the Massachusetts debates. So here's the question I've been asking you to ponder, and I want to throw it out there. Are you a part of the problem? Are you still a part of the problem? Because you are never a part of the solution until you actually become, quote unquote, a part of the solution. If you're not a part of the solution, guess what, my friends? Guess what? Well, okay, you're trying to stay out of the way. You're trying not to, you know, impede anybody, but you're still a part of the problem. You have to get engaged if you are going to be a part of the solution. It's pretty simple. And this isn't rocket science either. I know, you know, you're not in until you get in. I mean, you can wear all the hip garb and everything else, but unless you're in, you're really not quote-unquote in. You have to be in to be in. And I hope, and actually that makes sense. It goes to one of my favorite songs, you have to get in to get out, because you can't get out unless you're in. Anyway, don't want to get into too heavy of a philosophical discussion here. It is all about individual liberty and individual sovereignty, and that's really what's important. What's also important is I try to give you the content that as you start approaching your like-minded friends and say, hey, you've got to listen to this, then that way, when they tune in, they're hearing something that is completely different. They're hearing actually unvarnished truth. I don't care if I'm not the most polished conservative entertainer, radio show host, whatever you want to call it, you know, that you're tuning in and listening to. I really don't care. What I care about is giving you the truth, giving you the facts, so that you can start making the best decisions for yourself and for our liberty. And if we're going to save our liberty for our posterity, not for you, not for me, but for our posterity's sake, then we have to conduct Republic Review. One of those things I want to do is I want to plant the seed, want to plant that thought that what are you going to be doing this coming September for Constitution Day, Constitution Week, September 17th, Constitution Day. Probably the most important day of the entire year as far as government goes. Maybe not religious or other, you know, your wife's anniversary, you know, your wedding anniversary, I should say, because who knows? It could be your husband's anniversary. Anyway, fact of the matter is the most important day government-wise out of the entire year is Constitution Day. And so I'm hoping that you actually start approaching businesses and say, hey, why don't you do something for Constitution Day? You know, go to car dealers, go to American car dealers and confront them and say, why don't you do something for the community on Constitution Day? Give away a free Constitution. Give away a Declaration of Independence and Constitution booklet that you can get. And, you know, how much will that cost you? And get people to come to your car lot. How hard is that to do, folks? It would be great if every city across America that had American dealerships in them actually hosted a Constitution Day, Constitution Week. Come get your free Constitution. Wow, what is that? Wow, we're celebrating. That's it right there. We are celebrating the codified powers, the process. So just so you understand, codified does not mean written down or etched. Codified is a process. And so it is the process or the procedures of the federal government in functioning, whether it's the Article 5 process or their enumerated powers and the laws that they make in pursuance. But anyway, we're celebrating the Constitution, and that's the whole point, because it starts elevating in society what the Constitution really is. It is far more important that we celebrate the Constitution than we celebrate our Declaration of Independence. It should have shifted. The reason it didn't is because the guy that wrote the Declaration of Independence, back in those days, that's what they saw was more important. They really neglected, and Thomas Jefferson made a big deal about his Declaration of Independence. And I would too, probably. I don't blame the guy. But the fact of the matter is that Constitution is a far more sacred document than the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration was only the kickstart of this movement, and the Constitution was the final product, the amalgamation of all of the concepts of what the framers were trying to put, and they instilled it into their compact. The states, the founders, the states were the ones that instilled that compact and said, this is it. We have a limited government, and we have a nation of liberty. The first nation in the world in the history of mankind that has a nation of liberty that is not a theocracy. Because Israel actually had a nation of liberty, but it was a theocracy. This is not a theocracy. This is truly a society that embraces individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And one would question today that we're even embracing that, because we have all sorts of public servants who are out violating and doing all sorts of atrocious things to deny us our individual liberty and our individual sovereignty. Anyway, I do want to get into the debates. I just know that you're jonesing for the news. I'm sorry. And I really hope, to be able to schedule that time with Keith Borders, because our conversations are, you want to be a fly on the wall when we start talking, because this guy is, he's a brilliant man. He understands history in the details and so forth. And I have a high regard. I revere this man as truly a peer in the Constitution, and nothing but kudos. That's why I constantly plug his website, constitutionclub.ning.com. And so if you want to dial in because you can't stream or you're not able to listen when you travel outside of the broadcasting antennas of the show, because Red State Talk Radio is not nationwide. We're not we're not like Sean Hannity in every big market. We're not like all these other big markets. But we are offering, and as a matter of fact, the one thing about the Red State Talk Radio is doing, we're actually providing you the solutions. Especially right here, Reclaiming the Republic, because that's what it's all about. The listen line is 605-562-4209. And so put that into your phone, and when you dial that number, you'll hear good audio quality of this particular show during this time frame, Monday through Friday, okay? All right, with that, we're going to be going into a break, so I just want to prepare you. And then when we come right back, we're going to dive into the North Carolina debates. And actually, what I'll do is I'm going to kind of give you a little, one of the nuances that I noticed regarding the debates and so forth, and why most of the meat is in the middle and the end. But anyway, let me let you go for a second, but please stay tuned. We'll be right back with some real meat for you. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so we're going to dive into the ratification debates, the North Carolina debates. But here's the interesting thing. The very beginning of the debate, the debates, they kind of have to lay the ground rules. They kind of have to set up who's going to be in charge. And they start talking about, you know, the Constitution. And in some cases, they maybe read through the entire Constitution first before they really have any debates. So that's one of the reasons why you probably find the majority of the real meaty stuff about one-third in, halfway through or so, and you actually find some details, and you can kind of see how they progress on what they're talking about when they're talking about it during the debates. Like, up front, are they talking about Article 2, impeachments, and so forth? And yes. And so the first citation that we have is a debate with, or actually a statement from Mr. Iredell, and this is regarding impeachment. Now, I will say this. The interesting thing, when it comes to militia, guns, and everything else, out of all of the colonies, I'm just giving you some anecdotal information. Out of all of the colonies, I find, and the irony is why this is important. Out of all of the colonies, the one state that talked the most and debated the, got down to the nuts and bolts and the nuances of the contract regarding the militia was Virginia. And isn't it interesting that Virginia is the first place? It is the ground zero for this huge paradigm shift of violating the Constitution and confiscating guns. Isn't that interesting? I find it interesting. Anyway, so Mr. Iredell says this regarding impeachment. He says, Mr. Chairman, I was going to observe that this clause vesting the power of impeachment in the House of Representatives is one of the greatest securities for a due execution of all public offices. Every government requires it. Every man ought to be amenable for his conduct, and there are no persons so proper to complain of the public officers as the representatives of the people at large. The representatives of the people know the feelings of the people at large and will be ready enough to make complaints. If this power were not provided, the consequences might be fatal. It will be not only the means of punishing misconduct, but it will prevent misconduct. A man in public office who knows that there is no tribunal to punish him may be ready to deviate from his duty. But if he knows there is a tribunal for that purpose, although he may be a man of no principle, the very terror of punishment will perhaps deter him. So what? Let me ask you this. I'm going to stop right here. Remember when McConnell and Ryan went to Obama and said, we're not going to impeach you. They gave him full immunity to do everything he wanted to do because they removed the terror of punishment for his bad behavior. Why else do you think he gave billions of dollars to Iran? Why else do you think that he did the atrocities and the treasonous acts that he did? It's the same thing with Clinton. But they did impeach Clinton, but they did it over the wrong reason. They had enough on Clinton to actually, he would have been the first president had they gone after him for all of his treasonous acts. He would have been the first president to dance at the end of the rope. But, of course, they're not going to do that. Well, actually, if you understand impeachment and the impeachment process, he would have lost his job. He would have been kicked out, gone through the full cycle, and then hopefully he would have been tried and prosecuted for treason for the treasonous acts that he did. But anyway, let me go back to Mr. Iredell. I just think it's really fascinating how they talk about these things and how they discussed it, kind of laid it all out there, and how, just like he says, once there is no, you know, if there's no terror of punishment, then the real bad guy can come out. And that's exactly what happened with Obama. Anyway, he says, I beg leave to mention that every man has a right to express his opinion and point out any part of the Constitution which he either thinks defective or has heard represented to be so. What will be the consequence if they who have objections do not think proper to communicate them, and they do not, and they are not mentioned by others? Many gentlemen have read many objections which perhaps have made impressions on their minds, though they are not communicated to us. I therefore apprehend the member was perfectly regular in mentioning the objections made out of doors. Such objection Such objections may operate within the minds of gentlemen who, not being used to convey their ideas in public, conceal them out of deference. Anyway, the next comment is followed by Mr. Bloodworth, which is right after Mr. Iredell makes this comment, and he says, "This sole power of impeachment given to the House of Representatives deprived the state of the power of impeaching any of its members." He was definitely speaking out of turn because he obviously didn't realize that these powers only are within the general government and all powers not, you know, taken from the states. I mean, the states can have their own powers of impeachment. And as a matter of fact, once the Constitution got out, I mean, the realignment and all the constitutional conventions and everything else, they all started instituting some of these exact same practices. And they started deviating as, you know, slavery and some of these other things started arising. And the interesting thing is that after the slavery movement and the 14th Amendment, as you know, the 14th Amendment forced these public servants to actually honor their oath of office, because that was all based on honor and integrity and wasn't necessarily a guarantee that people would have to fulfill their oath of office. We were dependent on their honor. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment removed our dependency on their honor and gave teeth to actually holding these people accountable. Obama should have been removed from office. He should have been removed from office by the Department of Justice or by any good serving public servant and say, "You're violating the Constitution." Same thing with Clinton. Same thing with Bush. Same thing with Bush. Almost every single president, we're filled. Our halls of politicians and government, our halls of government are filled with corrupt politicians who are violating their oath of office in every turn that they make. Anyway, so he goes on and says, this is Mr. Bloodworth, and he says, "This impeachment extended only to the officers of the United States, that it would be improper if the same body that impeached had the power of trying, that therefore the Constitution had wisely given the power of impeachment to the House of Representatives and that of trying impeachments in the Senate." Then Mr. Joseph stands up and says, "Mr. Chairman, the objection is very strong. If there be not one body to try, where are we? If any tyranny or oppression should arise, how are those who perpetrated such oppression to be tried and punished? By a tribunal consisting of every man who assist in such tyranny? Can any tribunal be found in any community?" These are some very salient points he's making here. "Who will give judgment against their own actions? It is the nature of man to decide against himself." And he's actually asking a very good question. Is it the nature of man to decide against himself? No, a man is always justifying everything he does. "I am obliged to the worthy member from New Hanover for assisting me with objections. No one can impeach but the representatives, and the impeachments are to be determined by the senators, who are the one branch which we are dread under this Constitution." And so the next person that gets up and speaks is Governor Johnston. And this is what he says, because he's not the chairman. He's actually a functioning member and debater for the Constitution. He was one of the few governors that actually was in favor of the Constitution in North Carolina, because Clinton was against it, and so was Patrick Henry, who was the governor at the time as well. And I don't know if Clinton was actually a debater or if he was the chairman. But I know Patrick Henry was not the chairman. He was the lead in the opposition against the Constitution. And they thought that by him doing so, that they would have a good bulwark in stopping the Constitution in Virginia. But anyway, let me move on. "Mr. Chairman," and this is Governor Johnston, "Mr. Chairman, the worthy member from Grainville surprises me by his objection." So we've got like three or four people that have come up, you know, in responding to the Mr. from Grainville. I don't know who his name. I'd have to go back up. But anyway, "It has been explained by another member that only officers of the United States were impeachable. I never knew any instance of a man being impeached for a legislative act. Nay, I never heard it suggested before. No member in the House of Commons in England has ever been impeached before the Lords, nor any Lord for a legislative misdemeanor. A representative is answerable to no power but his constituents. He is accountable to no being under heaven but the people who appointed him. So he's giving you a very good look at the level of sovereignty our sovereigns have. And when I say our sovereigns, I mean our legislators. We have legislators at many levels. We have it at the federal level in Congress. We have the state legislatures. We have the bicameral legislative bodies. And then we have sovereigns at the county, or county supervisors, commissioners, or what have you. And their responsibilities parsed out to those appropriate things for how they need to govern. And that's why the most of our life's, you know, ills come from our local, but the problem is that our local and states have been marginalized to the federal government is in our knickers about everything. But anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so now we actually see, because if as you read further, because we're just talking about the impeachment process and how they were defining it and so forth. And so we started with Mr. Iredell, and then we went to Mr. Bloodworth, and then Mr. Speight, who were all constitutional or federalist, and Mr. Joseph Taylor, His Excellency Governor Johnston. And then Mr. Taylor stands up and says, hey, and this is what Mr. Taylor says. Well, regarding impeachment, it now appeared to him in a still worse light than before. In other words, the way they're talking about it, it even made, you know, less sense. And so Mr. Bloodworth actually comes out and says, as this was a constitution for the United States, he should not have made the observation he did. Had the subject been particularly mentioned that the word sole power of impeachment was so general and might admit of such latitude of construction as to extend to every legislative member upon the continent so as to preclude the representatives of the different states from impeaching. And so Mr. McLean then pipes up and says, Mr. Chairman, if I understand the gentleman rightly, he means that Congress may impeach all the people or officers of the United States. If the gentleman will attend, he will see that this is a government for confederated states. Now, see, this is where I'm telling you, they're still seeing this as a confederation of states. Because the United States, or I should say the general government, or the federal government, is not being granted full powers. They are given very limited powers to only do certain things. That's why they continue to call, you know, their states their own country. You know, Jefferson referred to Virginia as his country in the United States. So they understood that this was really a confederacy, and here it was stated, government for confederated states, that consequently it can never intermeddle with no power that isn't given. I confess I can see no more reason to fear in this case from our own General Assembly. A power is given to our state Senate to try impeachments. It is not necessary to point out some tribunal to try great offenses. Should there not be some mode of punishment for the offenses of the officers of the general government? Is it not necessary that such officers should be kept within proper bounds? The officers of the United States are excluded from offices of honor, trust, or profit under the United States on impeachment for and conviction of high crimes and misdemeanors. This is certainly necessary. This exclusion from offices is harmless in comparison with the regulation made in similar cases in our own government. Here it is expressly provided how far the punishment shall extend, and it shall extend no further. On the contrary, the limits are not marked in our own Constitution, he's talking about his state, and that the punishment may be extended too far. I believe it is certain and known fact that the members of the legislative body are never, as such, liable to impeachment, but are punishable for law of crimes and misdemeanors in their personal capacity. For instance, the members of assembly are not liable to impeachment, but like other people, are amenable to the laws for crimes and misdemeanors committed as individuals. But in Congress, a member of either house can be no officer. Anyway, one of the things that's really interesting, because this was a kind of a confusing matter for these folks, because they were doing something that was different. In the Constitution, if you understand, technically, the legislators were above the law. In other words, if you're a state legislature, or in most states, they do the exact same thing. They use the exact same language as the U.S. Constitution, that as a legislator during session, they can't be accountable for speeding, traffic tickets, and but if they commit a crime, a misdemeanor, or a felony, they can be, but they can't be taken from their session. So they're above the law in lots of ways, except for a few. And that comes to the bribery, treason, and those types of things, corruption, where they can actually be pulled and removed from office instantly as soon as somebody says, yeah, you've committed treason. So anyway, this is pretty interesting. Now, Mr. Johnston, or Governor Johnston, steps up and says, Mr. Chairman, I find that making objections is useful. I never thought of the objection made by the member of New Hanover. I never thought that impeachments extended to any but officers of the United States. When you look at the judgment to be given on impeachments, you will see that the punishment goes no further than to remove and disqualify civil officers of the United States who shall, on impeachment, be convicted of high crimes and misdemeanors. Removal from office is the punishment, to which is added further disqualification. How could a man be removed from office who had no office? An officer of this state is not liable to the United States. Congress could not disqualify any officer of this state. No body can disqualify but that body which creates. We have nothing to apprehend from this article. We are perfectly secure at this point. I should laugh at any judgment they should give against any officer of our own. Anyway, so he goes on, and they kind of meander a little bit further, and then Mr. Iredell says this, and he says, "Mr. Chairman, the argument of the gentleman last up," and the gentleman, so when I'm talking about Mr. Iredell here, Mr. Iredell's speaking was regarding Mr. Bloodworth, which we just skipped over because it wasn't important. So he's not debating or responding to the good governor that just spoke. And this is what Mr. Iredell says. "Mr. Chairman, the argument of the gentleman last up is founded upon misapprehension. Every article refers to its particular object. We must judge of expressions from the subject matter concerning which they are used. The sole power of impeachment extends only to the objects of the Constitution. The Senate shall only try impeachments arising under the Constitution. In order to confirm and illustrate that position, the gentleman who spoke before explained it in a manner perfectly satisfactory to my apprehension. Quote, under this Constitution. What is the meaning of these words? They signify those arising under the government of the United States. When this government is adopted, there will be two governments to which we shall owe obedience. To the government of the Union in certain defined cases." Now, see, it wasn't just an unlimited, you owe them obedience. "Only in certain defined cases. To our own state government in every other case. If the general government were to disqualify me from any office which I held in North Carolina under its laws, I would refer to the Constitution and say they violated it as only extended to the officers of the United States." So in other words, the federal government can't disqualify people that are serving within states until the 14th Amendment. Once people are removed and banned in accordance to the 14th Amendment, that banishment or that disability, as they refer to it, cannot be removed until 2/3 of both houses of Congress vote to remove that disability. Okay? So anyway, I just want to share this stuff. So as these guys started looking at this concept of impeachment, even they were a bit confused. But I'm trying to bring some clarity to this as they go through this. And North Carolina, surprisingly, compared to Massachusetts and a few of the other debates, they got into the details of this in a pretty decent way. And so the next time we talk, and the next thing of note, because this whole part of the North Carolina debates, if you go, and let me find out the date here. If you go to the North Carolina debates and you start reading on what the date is, and you know what? Oh, heavens forbid. This was July 24th, and there were a lot of people talking on July 24th. And so they end up, and they're all talking about impeachments, and then they get into some other things at the end of the 24th. But there was a very long debate that day. Anyway, so the next person that's speaking is Mr. Davey. And he answered that impeachments were confined to cases under the Constitution, but it did not descend to petty offices. If the gentleman meant that it would be troublesome and inconvenient to recur to the federal courts in case of oppressions by officers and to carry witnesses such great distances, he would satisfy the gentleman that Congress would remove such inconveniences as they had proper of appointing inferior tribunals where such disputes would be tried, or where such disputes would be tried. Anyway, then Mr. Taylor stands up and says, "Mr. Chairman, I conceive that this Constitution be adopted. We shall have a large number of officers in North Carolina under the appointment of Congress. We shall undoubtedly, for instance, have a great number of tax gatherers." Now, these guys are getting, loose with their interpretation. They're using a little bit of artistic license with this fact of, oh, we're going to have a great number. And that's what he says right here, have a great number of tax gatherers. These guys were just doing everything they could to try to get people, using fear mongering, to try to get people to not accept the Constitution. there was no such thing as great large body of tax gatherers. They didn't have the IRS. That was only something when they got so confident in violating the Constitution that they deployed the IRS. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So the interesting thing here, and I'm going to point out, maybe because I have had a longer view of the Constitution than everybody here in this room that's talking. I mean, the Constitution was just printed. These guys are just learning it, so they don't necessarily know the ins and outs, but they can argue it, and they do a good job at arguing it, especially Mr. Iredell. I have a great fondness of how he sat down and tried to explain the Constitution. But here, Mr. Taylor is making an assertion that we shall undoubtedly, and this is what he says, we shall undoubtedly, for instance, have a great number of tax gatherers in our state. And the fact of the matter is, if he actually understood the Constitution, if anybody would have corrected him, what they should have said was, no, Mr. Taylor, you're wrong. The people that will be enforcing the laws of the Constitution, such as collecting taxes, will be done by the militia, not a great number of tax gatherers. They will be us. They will be ourselves, because we are the militia. But they didn't do that. And I don't know if that's because of my sensitivity today to this huge thing, or just the fact that they were really bogged down in the weeds on this impeachment and so forth. But anyway, Mr. Taylor goes on and says, if any of these officers shall do wrong, when we come to fundamental principles, we find that we have no way to punish them but by going to Congress at an immense distance, whither we must carry our witnesses. Now, see, if he understood the concept of the militia enforcing the Constitution, then they would not be enforcing the Constitution if it was unconstitutional. I mean, it would instantly be void, and Congress would have the problem of what do we do? And that's when, you know, it gets brought up by the states. And that's the brilliance of what Madison and Jefferson tried to do regarding Republic Review. Having the states step up and go, show us where we delegated you this power to be able to do this. Oh, yeah, education. Show us where we delegated the power specifically for you to regulate and manage education, to tax us and give us money, and to force us into educating in a particular way of your desire. Where is that in the Constitution? Oh, it's not there? Then you are violating the Constitution, and cease forthwith, or we will come and descend upon you with the vengeance of heaven. I'm sure that's exactly what they would have said. But anyway, he goes on to Mr. Taylor and says, every gentleman must see in these eases that oppression will arise. I conceive that they cannot be tried elsewhere. I consider that the Constitution will be explained by the word soul, S-O-L-E, quote unquote. If they did not mean to retain a general power of impeaching, there was no occasion for saying the sole power. And I think, you know, these guys were just reading way too much into this, that the sole power of impeachment shall be done by the House of Representatives. No, it means that for the federal government, and especially for the President of the United States, Vice President and others, the sole power of impeachment of that one particular person shall be the House of Representatives. He goes on and says, I consider, therefore, that oppressions will arise. If I'm oppressed, I must go to the House of Representatives to complain. I consider that when mankind are about to part with rights, they ought not only to have those rights which they can with convenience relinquish, and not as much must involve them in distress. Mr. Spate then quickly answers, in answer to Mr. Taylor, observed that though the power of impeachment was given, yet it did not say that there was no other manner of giving redress. That is, that it was very certain and clear that if any man was injured by an officer of the United States, he would get redress by a suit of law. Obviously, he was a lawyer, right? So, going on to Mr. McLean's response, Mr. Chairman, I confess I have never heard before a tax gatherer was worthy of impeachment. It is one of the meanest and least offices. Now, if you understand who the tax gatherers were at the time, that was the sheriffs. Just so you understand, that was the British infrastructure. Sheriffs were responsible for collecting taxes. They were also responsible for making sure that elections were done, and they were, in some ways, a form of a magistrate. But I'm just telling you that the sheriffs were the ones that were going to be the tax gatherers. But technically, the Constitution shifted that. It shifted the execution of all laws of the Union were to be done by the militia, not by the sheriff, not by anybody else. And they even talk about it. We'll get into it when we get into Virginia regarding the militia and how they were to be implemented. And sadly, they didn't get into it in other states. But all the clarity is necessary within these different states as their focuses were actually different. And anyway, so Mr. McLean says, Mr. Chairman, I confess I've never heard before that a tax gatherer was worthy of impeachment. It is one of the meanest and least offices. Impeachments are only for high crimes and misdemeanors. If anyone is injured in his person or property, he can redress by a suit. Why does the gentleman talk in this manner? It shows that wretched shifts gentlemen are driven to. I never heard in my life of such silly objection, a poor, insignificant, petty officer amenable to impeachment. Kind of interesting and kind of, a good back slap with the back of his hand or what have you. Anyway, Mr. Iredell then steps up and says, Mr. Chairman, the objection would be right if there was no other mode of punishment. But it is evident that an officer may be tried by a court of common law. He may be tried in such a court for common law offenses. He goes on and says, whether impeached or not, as it is to be presumed that inferior tribunals will be constituted, there will be no occasion for going always to the Supreme Court. even in cases where the federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction. Where this exclusive cognizance is not given, redress may be had in the common law courts. And I have no doubt such regulations will be made as will put it out of the power of officers to distress people with impunity. Now, here's where Governor Johnson steps up and he says, men who were in very high offices could not come at the ordinary course of justice. But when called before this high tribunal and convicted, they would be stripped of their dignity and reduced to the rank of their fellow citizen, and then the courts of common law might proceed against them. And that's how they kind of closed out this whole thought of impeachment. And so you understand that the House of Representatives has the responsibility to determine if a law has been broken and if there is enough evidence to say we believe a law has been broken, then they vote to impeach. And just to be clear, the word impeach is just synonymous with indict. He has been indicted. He has not been proven guilty. Based on their assessment of the facts, they believe he needs to be tried to be found either guilty or not guilty by the Senate. That is all that the House impeachment process is. And so anyway, as we move down and further into the depths of, and they still, this is the following day, July 25th, they, you know, kick off, they kind of read some stuff, and they get into it. And then Mr. McClain resurrects this idea on the impeachment. And he says, Mr. Chairman, I have no inclination to get up a second time. But some gentlemen think this subject ought to be taken notice. I recollect it was mentioned by one gentleman that petty officers might be impeached. It appears to me, sir, that the most horrid ignorance to suppose that every officer, however trifling his office, is to be impeached for every petty offense, and that every man who should be injured by petty officers could get redress by this mode of impeachment at the seat of government at the distance of several hundred miles, whether he would be obliged to summon a great number of witnesses. I hope every gentleman in this committee must plainly see that impeachments cannot extend to inferior officers of the United States. Such a construction cannot be supported without a departure from the usual well-known practice both in England and America. Both this clause empowers the House of Representatives, which is the grand request of the Union at large, to bring great offenders to justice. It will be kind of a state trial for high crimes and misdemeanors. I remember it was objected yesterday that the House of Representatives had the sole power of impeachment. The word sole was supposed to be extensive as to include impeachable offenses against the particular states. Now, for my part, I can see no impropriety in the expression the words relate to the general objects of the Union. It can only refer to offenses against the United States, nor can it be tortured so as to have many other meanings of perversions and usual meanings. The House of Representatives will have the sole power of impeachment and the Senate the sole power of trying, and here is the valuable provision not found in other governments. And he was absolutely correct. We're diving through these things. We're giving you the clarity exactly what the terms of the contract and the definitions of this contract really mean, that contract being our Constitution. We're reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.